Let's welcome Joe Wrightson. I always get caught at these moments, Joe. Good morning, Joe. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. I'm so sorry. This is a hard moment.
It's a hard moment for Rod's family and friends. And we really do send condolences. Your mission now is to tell me how to pull myself together and how to argue well. We'll traverse some of the traps people fall into and the strategies to help ease tension. First of all, Joe, we have to argue, don't we? We have to deal with conflict in our relationships.
Yeah, we do. And the reality is that when we're usually, like, when we're living with somebody, they're going to get on our nerves. We're going to find things that we don't agree on. And that's just all really normal. And we've got to work our way through it somehow because we've got to find a way to continue living together or continue being in a relationship.
So is the right word to use argument is a better word managing conflict, or do we just need to accept that that conflict will at times get heated?
I tend to use the word conflict or tension. I don't often say the word argue, and I think that's because maybe it's through media or maybe it's through how most of us have experienced arguments in the past, but it can feel a little bit scarier. It can feel more aggressive. And I find that people are more comfortable thinking about conflict than they are thinking about, oh, I'm going to go and have an argument now. So I tend to stay away from that language as it's got other connotations with it.
So how do we talk about it with each other and how do we do it well, Joe?
Ooh, yeah, well, I think it's a lifelong battle for every couple, really. And that's what we're talking about this morning, is we're talking about romantic couples outside of, you know, family or friends, relationships. I think the biggest thing to do, the biggest kind of best strategy that couples could employ with each other is to practice really, really good listening. So often when we're in a conversation with, and when we're talking about something we disagree on, we're really, really bent on how do I get my point across? And even while they're talking, we're thinking about what our point is and how we are right. And fundamentally, this is going to create more cracks in the relationship than heal it. So nobody wins an argument. Like, it's not going to work. There will be resentment. There will be pain. Someone will feel like they were overlooked. The goal is that you compromise, you negotiate, and you come to a solution together. So if you're both occupied by being right, nobody's winning actually at the end of that.
This raises the question of when and how you start a discussion like this, because often they start when you're already in that kind of red zone in the head, right? And they escalate from there. Do you need to deal with it on the moment? Are there times to just say, let's talk about this later? Let's talk about where things go off the rails. And often it's the way an argument starts, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of people waiting. Now, I know that's really challenging. And people always say to me, but how? Like, how do you do that? And I think that it's a discipline, to be honest. I think it's a muscle that you work. It's really unnatural, particularly if you've never seen it modeled. It's unnatural to pause on your emotion and go, okay, I'm going to spend some time reflecting on this, and then I'm going to dive in when I've got a better sense of what's going on. Because often when we react, we're doing just that. We're having an emotional reaction, and we're not 100% sure what's kind of triggered it. Like, what is the deep layer there? What's the need? What's the feeling that we really need to address? And so I find that when people give themselves even an hour or a night, that they come into a conversation in a much healthier place and with a better sense of what was going on for them. And then they can problem solve, as opposed to us dealing just with the surface emotion, which is often anger. Anger is what we call a secondary emotion. And what we want to get to is the primary emotion. Like, what's happening underneath anger? That's where we need to go.
So if you're in a situation, and this can often happen, where someone really wants to push on and have this out now, and someone else is thinking neither of us is in the right frame right now, what do you do about that situation? What's the sort of comment that you can come back and say, yes, I want to get to the bottom of this, but the situation we're in right now is not the way to do it?
I think if you even take a step back there, ideally we have conversations about conflict when we're not in conflict. So you make a plan together when you're actually in an okay space about how you're going to do those moments, knowing that they're going to come up. So for example, very early on when Dave and I first started living together, this is my husband, we made an agreement that once a week We would talk about the sticky points, the tricky stuff that had happened during that week, but we would hold it until that conversation. And then we would have quite a structured conversation, like how we had a plan around how that would go. And what that meant was that we knew where we were going during the week when things came up. And sometimes I would journal about it, or he would spend, he would go and talk to a friend, or whatever our strategy was to cope until we got to that conversation. And then we had a structured way of talking about what we had struggled with. So ideally make a plan when you're not already in conflict. And then if you are in the moment, I think using that phrase you just said earlier is really great. Hey, I'm in the red right now. Like, I'm functioning in my red brain and I'm not functioning well is what that means. And so I need to take a pause just so that I can respond really well to what you're saying and I can actually hear you, because I'm going to struggle to do that. So making it about the other person, showing empathy while you're doing that, as opposed to, I just feel so angry, I'm going to say something I regret. Like, that's not going to land particularly well, but it's often what people want to say. So have a plan, and then in the moment, show empathy, explain what's going on for you. And then if you need to, you can actually just take yourself away, but explain why and what, like, hey, I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about this in an hour, or I really want to talk about this with you, but is it okay if we do that tomorrow? What often happens is that someone's kind of avoidant of conflict and they struggle to make that plan. So they struggle to say, hey, this is when we're going to circle back and do it. And they tend to just avoid it altogether.
The other thing is recognizing your conflict style, isn't it? And some people, and they're often the most annoying, can stay very calm and cool through a conversation, and someone else is just going to get racked up, and that often feels like it's an imbalance. Like, you often want someone to come back at you with your arguing style. Do couples need to understand what their respective, methods are for this, and as I said, use the word respect what your different ways of approaching this are.
Yeah, I actually think that often this stems from what I call your attachment style. I'm not sure if you've heard of that phrase. It's pretty common, but understanding how you experienced attachment growing up will tell you exactly how you're going to do conflict in the future. So looking at the map you were given will communicate how you will do it in relationship. And so I find people fit into three camps. They are anxious. So, and what that means is that they pursue the person the whole time. So they're when they're in conflict, they're like, I want to talk about this now. I can't cope. I can't sleep. We're going to talk about it till 3 a.m. We need to text about it endlessly until it's resolved and we're harmonious. Then you've got the avoidant person who struggles with conflict. They potentially want to run away. They want to leave the house, but it's coming from a place of fear and overwhelm. And then you've got what we call a securely attached person who has high trust in self and then high trust in others. They take a team approach, so they know what the team needs and they go, hey, I don't think we are going to do our best conversation like this, so we'll make a plan. And they don't it doesn't derail them emotionally, and they can have these conversations that can be quite difficult, but they can do them from quite a secure place. So I recommend people actually look into their childhood, look into their past to understand how they are functioning, not accusing the other person around how their partner is functioning.
So knowing your own flashpoints too, and you're right, a lot of this is about pre-planning, isn't it? It's about having strategies and anticipating situations in advance. I know we often talk about this when we do our it's Christmas family dinner time or whatever. How is technology changing the way we do conflict, Joe? It's changed everything else, how we break up and goodness knows what not, how we get together, how we break up. How has it changed how we argue?
Oh gosh, this is the killer for me as a therapist, is hearing and watching people do conflict over text. It is so frustrating. People just have hard conversations over text message. I mean, a better strategy would be over voice message, but all around it's not great. And we tend to, misunderstand each other. We don't use tone. We don't use our body to communicate. So it's really hard to pick up on empathy or understanding. And it takes so long. You could resolve that conversation in about 3 minutes, but over text, it's 3 hours. It's just, it derails the other parts of your life where you're out and about. Maybe you're at sports practice or you're at work. And so it's derailing what you're doing in those environments because you're texting. I mean, it's just so problematic. So I am always telling couples, stop. Stop having conflict over text. You need to like cut it off straight away. So you go, this is a really important conversation. I really want to talk to you about this. Let's talk about it at X time. So you're affirming the other person, you're saying you're committed, but you're communicating this is not okay to do over text. Please, please, everybody, stop doing that.
Look, the problem is we're increasingly becoming dependent on on this as a means of communication. But you just have to rule it out as a means of doing conflict, right? The other thing is it's so easy to misinterpret, and
Oh,
literally
so
you can
much.
put the angry emoji there if you want, but it's also it risks that kind of cross wires that can happen at the best of times, let alone when you're communicating by that bit of kit.
Oh, I know. Nobody feels cared for over a text message in a conflict. Nobody feels really heard or really listened to. And that's our ultimate goal. In every single conflict, the goal is to listen to each other, to hear the other person out, and respond with a strategy or a plan that's going to meet the needs of both of you. And that is very difficult over text. So, yes, I understand, maybe you live apart or your partner's traveling or whatever. I understand. I've been in that situation as well. But do it over video call or do it over at least over just the phone would be way, way better than messages.
What about where children are around? Is it a no-no? Do you keep it away from them?
I have some internal tension about this, to be honest, because kids who grow up as adults to say, I never saw my parents have conflict, they do tend to struggle to do conflict. But children who grew up with houses that were tumultuous or felt chaotic or felt like there was too much tension, they also really struggle with conflict. So what we're going for is a little bit of a happy medium where kids see you disagree, but they don't see it derailing your relationship. So there's no slamming of doors, there's no walking out, there's no escalated voices. It's a disagreement, and it's really good as well if they can see you resolve it, or they can see the strategies that you're using around listening, hearing the other person's perspective. So I tend to think disagreement, but not emotional, tense conflict. I would keep that away from your kids.
You need to model how to resolve these conflicts, but when it's not going well, best not to, huh?
Yeah, I if you do have one, let's say you have a bit of a blow up, someone leaves the house, they slam the door, whatever happens, make sure to circle back to your kids and process it with them. Explain what was going on, not why you were necessarily fighting or anything like that, but that this is something that adults do sometimes, and this is how you're trying to do it better, and it's really important they know that the house is safe and that their parents are still going to be together, Make sure that they feel secure because they do tend to go into a little bit of a chaotic state.
All right. What happens if these conflicts are mounting in frequency? I know you said you want to get to the primary emotion and perhaps the primary issue, but they can honestly be a signal of bigger issues, can't they, Joe? And where and when are those warning signs?
Yeah, if you are crying lots, or you feel like you're walking on eggshells, or you don't have very many good days, or you just have a good day every once in a while, like you probably need to get some professional help if you can, or there are some online relationship courses you can do because there's obviously some patterns or some behaviors that are really problematic, and there's only so much kind of advice that I can give you over the radio that's going to help. If you consistently feel undervalued, disrespected, if those are words that are used in your relationship by the other person, you've got some bigger problems afoot. And if you have done everything you can, if you've sat in counseling and you've tried all the strategies and your partner is not doing the same thing, if they're not meeting you where you're at, then potentially you need some time apart. And that can be what we call a therapeutic separation, where there are goals, where there's a plan. But yeah, there are situations where it's intolerable.
And is it sometimes also a signal if you're endlessly fighting that there might be some serious fundamental issues and decisions to consider?
Absolutely. And I'm going to say money is a really common one, sex is a really common one. And parenting. So really, and actually household labor. All of those are often significant points of conflict. And if you're having, if you're arguing or having conflict or tension every week over those, then, we need some intervention.
All right, let's have a look at a couple of questions that have come in. Sometimes my husband hears things better, in inverted commas, if it's written, e.g. email or even text, not in the heat of the moment, but still useful. Is there a time to calmly put in writing what you're trying to express? Can that work for some people?
I think email can work. I think text is often it's not as good because it's shorter. So people can email, write letters, write notes, and and leave them in the morning or leave them at night or whatever it is. That can be effective. I would encourage, if that's the strategy being used, to be filled with empathy and compliments and care. So you're really doing your compliment sandwich there, which is, this is all the things I love about you. These are some of the struggles I'm having. These are all the ways that I think we could do this better. Love you, love you, love you, love you. So you want to embed it with heaps of affirmation because they're not getting that from your tone or from your body language.
Someone says, what if you're trying to resolve conflict, but ultimately you disagree on the problem? How can you find a solution?
Yeah, so the Gottman Institute, which is a relationship research and therapy center in America, they actually say that 70% of disagreements will not be resolved. And what that means is that you're not going to totally agree with the other person, but you still make a compromise and make a plan. So you decide on a way to do that part of your life, parenting, money, whatever it is, that isn't exactly what you would want and isn't exactly what they would want. And that's healthy relationship. If one person's getting everything they want all the time, it's probably not that healthy of a relationship, but if you're constantly compromising, then it's probably a good signal that you're doing it well.
Very good. Thanks very much, Jo Robertson, on how to argue well.